Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs, Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, little Joey?
I'm doing okay.
Now, normally you have Fridays off. You work today.
That's true.
Why is that? Were you bad? Did you misbehave?
Do you recall what the thing I'm on in TSA, what it was, what the deal was with that?
Where you travel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's part of what they call the National Deployment Force. It's a group of maybe, right now, about 200. They're going to try to bolster it up to about 300 people. We go places where there's staffing shortfalls, you know, because people quit, turnover. We go places that need help for temporary measures, like this year, where there's the G8 summit, the Republicans, the Democrats are going to have their conventions. Some of us just went to the Super Bowl.
And by some of us, you don't mean you.
No, I didn't go. But if you recall last year, I was up in Barrow, Alaska at this time. That's a case of a staffing shortfall. There's a third.
Speaking of Barrow, Alaska, I'm going to jump in.
Uh-oh.
One of my favorite shows is An Idiot Abroad. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Do you know about it?
No.
Ricky Gervais sends his friend Carl Pilkington, who's not the brightest guy in the world, all around the world. And hilarity ensues because he's, not the brightest guy in the world. He's the kind of guy who'd rather just stay home and watch the telly. And, he's very, very set in his ways. They sent him to Barrow, Alaska. Because, they're doing a thing where it's the bucket list. And one of the things on the bucket list was to see whales. So they sent him up to Barrow, Alaska. And I guess there's the city Barrow.
Right.
And then there's, what do they call it, Barrow Post?
Point Barrow.
Point Barrow.
That's the actual physical landmark that is the most northern part of the United States. Which, if you look at the Arctic Circle, isn't much because there are plenty of other countries that go a lot farther into the Arctic. But nevertheless, we have a toehold there.
They sent him there. And the whole time, he's on a snowmobile, and he's wondering, well, will there be a restroom there? He gets there, and it's just a post in the ground surrounded by snow. And all I could think is, they're showing the city of Barrow, and they give him a job where he's grabbing the sacks of the toilet, throwing it in a big truck, which you never told us about. And all I could think is, Joe was there, and he didn't tell us about that the Point Barrow was just a big stick in the ground.
It pretty much.
Did they have toilets when you were there?
It pretty much is.
So anyway, I got you off track. I tend to do that.
Oh, that's okay. I nail you a lot of times. And sometimes with stuff we talk about.
Yeah, there you go.
However,
sometimes stuff with comics.
What I was going to say is the third thing we do is we go places when things go bad. Right now, I am somewhere where things went bad. I am not in Minnesota. That's all
I didn't know that.
That's all I can say.
Oh.
At least for now.
You didn't tell me that you'd taken off.
Well, it was quick. Basically, Wednesday, they called and said, hey, can you go Thursday? And I'm like, sure.
You had your go bag.
Oh, no, I had to pack. But speaking of which, later on, we can talk about what I brought to keep me entertained.
No. See, I'm doing overnights, and I have a go bag. I keep my gym bag in the car, and because I'm doing overnights, I threw in extra clothes into the gym bag as well as my gym clothes in case, something happens and I need to change clothes or I need to stay there a lot longer than I would have thought. I've got my laptop, and in my other I call my media go bag. I have sets of DVDs and graphic novels. Once again, in case, you know, I get called up and, hey, can you do an overnight like they did last night? They called me. I'm supposed to have Thursdays off, and Thursday is the day I use to kind of get my internal schedule back to normal. So I got home, and it's okay. I need to stay up till around noon. Then I'll take a quick nap so that I don't just collapse. And then, you know, I'll pound through, stay up till around 10, 10:30, and, you know, then sleep at night like normal people do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, you know, doing some cleaning, doing stuff, kind of keep myself awake, and I get a call at 11:30, and I was dumb enough to answer it. And it was the office saying, hey, we have more staff sick. Can you do the overnight tonight? It's like, oh, I guess I can. But I'd already kind of programmed, I'd missed my first window of falling asleep. So I'm laying there on the couch trying to go to sleep till around 2:30. I wake up around 7, and it's like, well, I guess that's all the sleep I'm getting.
Well, I've got one more surprise for you, even.
Is it punch and pie?
Well, actually, I do have punch here, and I already ate the pie, so you were close.
Is it a redhead?
No.
Damn it.
Now, as you're aware, May 19th and 20th, 2012, is the MCBA Spring Con Comic Book Celebration, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Which you should all go to.
At the Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the grandstand.
Which you should all go to.
And which I will not be back in time for.
What?
Yep.
You're leaving me to do the charity table all by myself?
Well, Ollie will be there.
You're leaving me to do the charity table all by myself?
And maybe Dana might show up and help. She's not, you know, running around trying to dodge boyfriends.
Or get new ones.
Yeah, the sad thing is, the way things are going, I probably won't be back in time for the con. And I'll be back one day after my wedding anniversary. Which, as if you recall last year, I was at the con on my wedding anniversary.
Yes.
Mostly.
So now, is it where you are that you're going to be staying? Or is it a different place?
No, as the plan is, they sent me here, and I'm going to stay here until towards the end of May.
And you can't tell us where it is?
Not yet.
You know where I think you are?
Where's that?
I think you're in a deep underground bunker.
My basement?
Preparing while they build the giant ark to save a few people when the big tidal waves and everything hit from the movie 2012.
Close, although it's zombie apocalypse. Oops, said too much. Anyways.
No, I'm ready for a zombie apocalypse.
Hey, did you see there was a, oh, I suppose now I won't find it. In Denmark, this is one of those, can I swear, I'll keep it clean. What the F were you thinking? In Denmark, they took the bird flu virus.
Okay.
One that does not affect humans. Altered a few of the whatever they're made of and mutated the bird flu virus so that it can cause a deadly pandemic.
Oh, well, that's good.
They did it because they wanted to know where to look in the future. So you don't have to worry because you don't eat meat. But let's just say I found that interesting that that happened and McDonald's is offering their McBites. Not that I'm saying anything. I mean, if McDonald's wants to give us free samples of McMites, I know I'll be more than happy to eat them. I'm not casting aspersions. I'm just saying.
Well, speaking of viruses, we'll talk a little about why we haven't had a show the last 2 weeks.
And it has nothing to do with Star Trek, the original series, Ring of Time.
No.
Although I am reading it. That's one of the books I brought with me. Because I'm a sucker for a good time travel story.
So a couple of weeks ago, the residents at the group home all started getting sick.
Uh-oh.
And you know you're in trouble when you come in to punch in, and they have a little note if there's a resident sick that says, you know, whatever the disease is, in cottage, there are four cottages. Let's just say, flu symptoms in cottage two. You go, oh, okay, need to be careful, got to wash my hands more, you know, wash everything down more. When I came in for my overnight on Sunday of that week, it said, flu symptoms in cottage one. Oh, I don't work in cottage one, but I'll be a little more careful. Next day, flu symptoms in cottage one and three. Oh, wow. The next day I come in, flu symptoms in cottage one, three, two, and four.
Jeez.
Oh. So I'm like, I have a little thing of Purell I carry in my pocket the whole time I'm there. I'm, you know, washing all the clothes and everything in hot water. I'm using the bleach wipes to wipe everything down. Thursday I get home. It's like, oh, okay. Oh, good. Get some time to rest.
It's a good thing we're doing this over the internet because I don't need your virus.
Well, this is more, I've been dusting the last couple of days, which I don't normally do. I don't believe in dusting. I just spray end dust on the cat and watch it run around. Eventually, you know, all the dust will stick to the cat. She'll lick it off and everything's clean.
And then you know, it's easy to pick up a hairball.
There you go. So Thursday, I come home. I go to the gym. I sleep. I watch some TV. And then I go and I sleep through the night. And Friday, I wake up. And I wake up unbelievably early because, you know, your body schedule's all messed up. I make a nice breakfast, you know, make some eggs, make some toast, do this, and then I don't feel so good, so I lay down, watch TV, and then I start to get really cold. And I check, you know, oh, well,
cold as ice.
It's getting a little chilly outside, maybe it's just, you know. By 11 Friday morning, I was shaking so hard that I couldn't stand up. Because I was just so cold and shaking so hard. And it's, oh, okay. And I grab the thermometer and I take my temperature. Oh, my temperature's only 99 degrees. And then I have to go to the bathroom. And I'm in the bathroom for quite a while.
Now, before we get any farther, do you keep comics in the bathroom for such reading emergencies?
I keep comic-related magazines in there.
Oh, that's good.
Because I did keep comics in there till I had a roommate. My roommate just didn't quite respect the fact that you don't throw wet towels on comics.
Yeah.
She no longer lives here, so. So I'm in there, and I come out, and I take my temperature again, and it's 101.7.
Jeez, you sound like Sheldon on Big Bang Theory.
Oh, and I lay down on the couch, and I'm just cold, and I wrap myself in the blanket. And for the next 2.5 days, the only thing I'm doing is drinking Gatorade, going to the bathroom, taking my temperature, and sleeping. I believe I had the deadly Mutaba virus.
Is that from playing bongos in a real fury, a la Frank Zappa?
I come back Sunday, and I'm doing my shift, and I'm... Basically, my fever had broke Sunday morning, and I'm back working Sunday night. So I'm not in the best of shape, and it's, oh, you know, all the residents are sick. Most of the staff were sick all weekend. I guess that the Monday morning, 7 staff called in sick before 6 a.m. Mm. By Wednesday, 27 staff had called in sick for at least one shift over the previous 3 days. I had to work extra, you know, had to cover shifts because people were calling in sick. I was staying late. Basically, I would say, look, I can stay till 9, and then at 9:30, I'm not safe to be on the road, so I need to leave at 9. And I would come in early, and I did extra shifts. So that's why we didn't record last week. I'm covering for all the sick staff.
Yeah, because I remember we were set up to record, and then I think I sent you a text, and you woke up like at what, 7, 8 o'clock or something.
Yeah, because it had been and we were going to record on Saturday, and I worked Saturday till like 9 or so, and it's okay. I'll do this, and Joe said, "Oh, I got to go get my daughter." And we'll record when we get back. And I said, oh, cool. I'll lay down, watch some TV. Next thing I know, it's 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I even had to do an extra shift last night, which I talked a little about, because staff are still calling in sick. It's the deadly Mutaba virus.
Maybe I'm lucky I did get out of town.
Now, you see, when I was a kid and I'd get sick, my mom would make a bed on the couch and get a TV tray, and on the TV tray, she'd put, you know, some stuff for me to read, and some 7-Up with a bendy straw.
You don't watch Big Bang Theory, do you?
No, I don't. But here's the other thing, and believe it or not, this ties into an actual news story.
Uh-oh.
My grandmother on my dad's side would go and get me stuff to read, and she didn't know what I liked. So she would buy Cracked magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I read Mad Magazine. I liked Mad Magazine. And Cracked always struck me as the cheap knockoff version. But when I was sick, it was, well, there's this one guy who draws a lot of the stories in there, and his stuff I like. Now, the word balloons always were square, and it looked like they were done on a typewriter, which I didn't like at all. But I liked his art. And you know who that artist was, don't you, Joe? Who was the one good artist in Cracked magazine?
Oh, who was the guy who did the Chicks with the Big Hooters?
No, you're thinking Bill Ward. I'm talking about John Severin.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm still thinking Bill.
John Severin, who passed away a week or so ago. And I don't want to get into a whole lot about it, but I would say that if you don't know much about John Severin and you haven't seen much of his art, just go out on the internet, look for his art. He worked for EC, and when Harvey Kurtzman quit editing Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat to concentrate on MAD, they gave Two-Fisted Tales to John Severin, who wrote all the stories in it and drew most of them. He then, after EC closed up, he went to work for Stan Lee, and then he got hired on at Cracked, and he kind of became the guy who drew... He would draw like half a Cracked magazine. In the last few years, he drew the Rawhide Kid miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
He's drawn Desperado. And I just got done reading the Immortal Iron Fist. He has a lot of art in the Immortal Iron Fist. Just beautiful, beautiful art. Wonderful storyteller. Passed away at 90. So, sad news, everyone. John Severin has passed away.
Did we ever find out, we were talking with Nick a couple weeks ago, he said that the Comic-Con's got a second timely artist coming, so we got two coming. But we never did find out who the second one was.
No, they haven't announced it yet, the bastards.
And he would have told us, too, because he knew we cracked open the first one.
Yep.
You'll have to get your best people on that.
Yes, I will. Wait, I have people?
Well, you have a cat.
Fidget. Fidget, get on the phone to Nick immediately and find out who the other artist is.
And they are...
She's just staring at me.
They are developing opposable thumbs, eventually. Eventually.
I'm a little worried about cats, though. You're talking about the bird virus. I heard a story where they've discovered that in cat feces is a microbe. That what it is, because rodents eat cat feces, this microbe wants to reproduce, and it reproduces in mouse brains and then, you know, gets into the cats and on and on. And what it is, it has evolved to where it causes the mice to be more aggressive. This microbe goes into a mouse's brain and causes the mouse to be more aggressive. So instead of hiding from the cats, it will, you know, try and take on the cats. And, of course, get eaten. The virus then gets into the cat and so on, or the microbe, whatever it is. And they're saying that this may cause mental illness in people because the microbe is getting into people. So, Joe, if I start becoming more aggressive, will you let me know?
Oh, shut up.
Fuck you!
You official crap holder.
We've gone pretty far, and we haven't talked a whole lot about comics.
Nope, not really.
Now, we'll talk about our sponsor, which is DreamHost.com. My bill for DreamHost is coming due within the next couple of weeks. And I checked a couple other websites to see what similar packages would cost. And DreamHost runs about 50% less than the other websites.
But you get the full 100% of the website. And more.
Yeah.
And more.
You know what? I've got, we've recorded like 60 some episodes of this podcast, or up to 60. I don't even know anymore. And it doesn't cost me any more to host them than it did before. And let me tell you something, these MP3 files are pretty big. Tons of hosting, tons of downloads, because we get a couple thousand downloads for every episode. Not a problem. I'm running four websites off of one domain name, not a problem. And you need a website, ladies and gentlemen. I had some friends who, they got tired of Facebook and they went over to Google+. And lately they've come back to Facebook, and what they said was, well, there's nobody on Google+ but Google employees, so we've come back to Facebook. So all these webs, the social networking and all this, no, you need a website. Nobody's going to take you seriously unless you have a website. You can get one at DreamHost.com. And if you use the code CRAZY, you get $20 off your first year.
Cool.
There you go.
You know, it's funny you were talking about Facebook and Google Chrome, because I was having the biggest problem on Facebook. It's like every time I would, you know, first of all, I made one mistake. I said yes to Timeline.
I have had Timeline for a while, and I have no problem with it.
But my problem with Timeline was every time I went back to look at something, it would pop me back to the top. Even if I just went like half a page down, it kept popping me back to the top. And then I'd go to the home page, and you'd be scrolling down, and all of a sudden, blip, I'd be back at the top.
Well, maybe you just need pop.
No, actually, it's a known...
Uh-oh, I'm getting more aggressive!
It's a known problem with Explorer. And Facebook's working on it. And I said, screw that. I download Google Chrome. Now I don't have any problem. Which comes in handy because, as you know, we do have the official Crazy Comics and Stuff podcast page. And you're all welcome.
And more of you people need to friend us or like it or to join in,
yeah,
or whatever.
We've had as high as 65, but every so often people, they must get tired of you know, your crazy right-wing antics. Because they drop.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, you're just out of control.
Such a radical.
I know. So, a matter of fact, the last thing posted there, I think I posted it, says I had a lot of variant covers on eBay, which right now I sold quite a few, but because I'm gone, the crazy at eBay shut down again. So I won't be talking about it, at least not till I get home. On the plus side, I know there's a comic shop nearby.
Oh. Well, you'll have to tell us about it when you can tell us where you are.
Very true. So I got that going for me, which is nice. I also, as long as we're talking about it, and should we just go into geeking and freaking?
Sure.
All right, and I'll start.
By the way, remember that Geeking and Freaking has a sponsor.
It does.
Does, and that's BartCop.com.
Oh no,
BartCop.com.
Speaking of a right-wing radical.
Speaking of a right-wing radical, he's about as far from it as you can get. BartCop.com is a political humor website. You should probably call it a blog, except he doesn't have blogging software. He started it as a newsletter he sent out called "Rush Limbaugh is a Lying Nazi Idiot."
So, you know, BartCop, lay off the Nazis, will you?
Bart's kind of, you know, kind of calm about some things, and he turned it into a website in 96, and four times a week he uploads a whole new page that goes through the news. It has links, it has jokes, It has political cartoons. It's got quizzes. It's just news on poker and tequila and TV shows and tons and tons and tons of pics of hot babes, too, by the way, if you go down the bottom and the Bart Cop Hotties links. And here's Bart Cop's ad.
Hi, my name's Bart, and I got a little radio show over at BartCop.com. We call it the Tequila Treehouse. And on the radio show, we talk about a lot of things. You know, we talk about sports, and we talk about sex, and we talk about TV, and we talk about movies. But really, we're not talking about those things. We're usually talking about the politics of the sports and the sex and the TV and the movies and that. So if you go to BartCop.com, you might get to hear a sample. Actually, the radio show is for the subscribers, but now and then we open it up to the general masses, or we play some snippets on there trying to tease you into subscribing. But that's over at BartCop.com, the Tequila Treehouse. Try it. You might like it.
That's BartCop.com, sponsor of Geekin' and Freakin'. So, Joe, what are you geeking and freaking about?
Well, as you know, the big thing I have to deal with is what am I bringing with me? I have yet to invest into a Kindle or whatever Barnes & Noble's selling, you know, one of those little tiny
books. Hopefully you bring pants.
Well, anyways.
It's a no pants party wherever Joe's hiding.
As I mentioned before, I picked up a new book from the Star Trek line, The Rings of Time by Greg Cox. And it basically is dealing with the USS Lewis and Clark under the command of Colonel Sean Christopher, which, if you remember the last time travel episode, his dad was the one who accidentally spotted the Enterprise when they got slung back in time.
Oh, okay.
And they beamed him aboard before his ship wiped out. But they had to get him back in time because although he didn't have a historical thing, his son did. So you got this guy in 2012, Omin Dime at Stardate 7103. Kirk's messing around, and somehow these two accidentally switch places in their mind, not body. So you got two commissions, two crews, and a time-twisting crisis that spans the centuries. Another book I picked up at our local half-price bookstore is Babylon 5 to Dream in the City of Sorrows, because as you know, I'm a big Babylon 5 fan. Off of eBay, do you remember a movie called Dark Star?
Yes, big fan of that movie.
I found the novelization of it by
Foster,
of course. You can find them on eBay. This one was pretty beat up. I picked it up for a buck.
I didn't even know there was one.
No, I was just flipping through, and it's like, well, for a buck, this ain't too bad. But what I'm really geeking on is before I left, I picked up The Essential X Factor number 4. And as you recall, I read 1 through 3 the last time I was deployed over the summer. So I'm looking forward to this. This should be a lot of fun. Some other things I got lined up. I got a DVD ROM that had all the Star Trek comics published from Golden Key up to Wildstorm. And then I've got Netflix, and I've been watching Arrested Development, which makes me laugh so hard I have to wipe my nose because I'm blowing snot out of it constantly. I just had to keep up with you and your cold.
One thing that's pretty funny about Arrested Development, when it was on, one of my coworkers at the job I was at the time swore up and down that it was kind of improv-y type, like This Is Spinal Tap and the Christopher Guest movies, where they're just told, here's the scene, go ahead and do it. And I tried to convince him that it's not true. I even said, look at the credits. At the beginning of the show, it says written by. But nope, he wouldn't believe it. I have since found a podcast called the Nerdist Writers Podcast, where they have TV writers discussing things. Mm-hmm. And they had one of the writers for Arrested Development. And one of the questions was, well, what's the hardest thing, you know, you've had to deal with in your career? And he said the hardest thing was nobody believes that Arrested Development had writers.
Now, you know,
he puts on his resume, I wrote Arrested Development, and people go, you just came up with the scenarios, right? No, I scripted.
I know. Isn't it just, it's one, a guy at work was telling me all about this show, and it happens to be on Netflix, all three seasons. And of course, as you know, they're working on a movie Or is it their work? I know they said 2013 Netflix is going to have new episodes of Arrested Development.
What it is, they're doing a series of episodes that will lead into a movie.
Okay. Yeah, I can't wait. My wife just texted me because she's watching it at home, and she watched the next episode. She said, you got to watch it. Because we're just dying. I think we're like maybe 7 episodes into the first season. And of course, as you know, Netflix has all the Star Treks on it. Most of the Doctor Who's, all of Battlestar Galactica. I may never need anything again.
Well, one thing, I'm geeking about is I've been going through a lot of DVDs that I would buy when they were on discount and go, well, you know, when I have time, I'll watch that. And on my overnights, I'm pretty much done with all the cleaning after about an hour, hour and a half. And I have very little work to do with the residents. You know, if one of the residents gets up, I help them with what they're dealing with. There are also some residents who you need to wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, including the one who tries kissing me every time I take her back to her room.
Oh, that's the girl. I was going to say, I know there's the one who likes to hit you.
Well, that's in Cottage 2. In Cottage 3, there's the one resident who... And I have to wake her up every night at 2 in the morning. And once she wakes up, she just, boom, okay, I'm up. She gets her walker, goes in the restroom, comes back. And as she's coming back, she goes, give me a hug. And, of course, the first time I went, oh, okay. And then she, you know, like, as I leaned over to hug her, she, like, gives me a big old kiss.
I've been known to do that to you.
And it's, no, no, Dorothy, you're not, you know, don't do that. And now every time I take her to bed, she's like, give me a hug. No, Dorothy, if I give you a hug, you're going to kiss me. She'll go, oh, bullshit. Go, nope, nope, I don't trust you. I don't trust you. And she'll kiss her hand, you know, the whole thing where you kiss your hand and then touch it to somebody. She doesn't quite have it down right. She'll kiss her hand, then she'll hit me in the face real hard.
Okay, that I've seen happen to you, so that's nothing new.
And I went through, I went through Mad Men. So love that show. So love that show. If that is on Netflix, Joe, you need to watch it.
I'd have to look. It might be.
It's only 4 seasons. I think each season's 13 episodes. If you're anything like me, you'll watch. You know, after you watch the first episode and you go, oh, that was good. And the second episode, no, yeah, it was good. By the time you get to the 5th episode, it's like, I need to know everything and I can't watch this fast enough. I finally watched Firefly. It's a DVD set I've had for like 5 years and haven't had time to watch. And I'm like everybody else who watched the show. It's a damn shame that Fox did it so wrong because they had a great setup. I really, really loved the characters. And now I'm doing Battlestar Galactica. I'm in the middle of the 2nd season. And as I'm watching this Battlestar Galactica, all I could think is, this is so good. How did they get something this good out of an original that was such a piece of cheese?
Yeah. And as a fangasm, there's a lot in the original Battlestar Galactica that I like. But when you look at it, it's just a 70s buddy flick, you know.
Yeah.
Starbuck, Apollo, you know, us geeks.
And it's the same story every time, you know.
Pretty much.
Oh, how long till the Cylons attack? Oh, Cylons attack. Now let's use the footage of people shooting them.
They tried to get away from that, but then at the last episode, in order to try to boost the ratings, they did finally have a, you know, Adama, I'm tired of running. We're going to attack. Now, I don't know. Did you ever read Richard Hatch's books where he kind of went, Battlestar Galactica, almost like the Next Generation?
No, I didn't.
They're actually pretty good. The only complaint I have is I can't figure out what order to read them in. You know, I almost have to look at the copyright dates because there's a definite continuation there. And I mean, to give you an idea of what's going on, Boxy's no longer called Boxy's Troy, and he has a thing for Starbuck's daughter, which I believe is the mother is Cassiopeia, if I recall the whole thing right. And this was kind of what I think Richard Hatch was working on all those years. If you were lucky enough to be at a con where he would show a trailer for the Battlestar Galactica they were trying to work on. And he actually got a lot of people to throw bits in. I mean, the actor who played Baltar, rest his soul, and a few of the other ones. And they actually had some pretty good CGI special effects. You probably can find the thing on YouTube now, because I think was it Universal or Paramount owns that property?
Universal.
They let Richard.
That's the one problem I have with the DVDs, too. Every episode starts with the Universal opening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, ugh, I'm so tired of looking at this opening. Just, you know, start the damn episode.
But they let him pretty much do what he did as long as, you know, because he was trying to promote it. And then they went the other direction, which was fine. But I keep thinking with all the, rejiggering they've been doing of all the programs, you know, there's no reason now why they couldn't go back and do his version of Battlestar Galactica if they wanted.
Did you watch the new Battlestar Galactica yet?
I've watched enough of it. Pat Gruber told me the very end of it, but I'm still going to watch it. Because I'm
Richard Hatch is in the new Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, he shows up. So is Luke.
He's a major character
too. But and that was kind of what the peace offering, because you know he was against it, but I think once he saw it, he was like, oh, this is good, and he may have said, you know, I want a piece of this somehow. One of my
the other
pictures I see online is you got Dirk Benedict and the actress from who plays Starbuck. It's Starbuck and Starbuck in Starbucks.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Comic-wise, the thing I'm geeking about, I'm reading The Chaos War, which was a Hercules crossover. And I'm not going to say it was great, but the two-part Thor story by J.M. DeMatteis is one of the best comics I've read in a long time. And the good thing is you don't need to know anything else for those two. So if you're digging through the quarter bins and you see that, grab those two issues. I think it's Chaos War Thor.
Hmm.
Might be my favorite Thor story of the past few years.
And I enjoyed the Secret Invasion Thor. It did something that a lot of it's one of the best things comic does. It's when, you know, you had the battle, you know, and you know, so if you want to throw a spoiler warning, go ahead. But like you said, it's probably in the quarter bins by now. But for some reason, Don Blake couldn't get there, and Beta Ray Bill was fighting his own, and this big monstrous gastropod Skrull god was finally beat Beta Ray Bill down to a pulp. And as Bill's slowly working his way towards the hammer, Don shows up. You may stand down, Bill. And then you pan up, and there's a shot of him. It's not Thor. It's Don Blake. Just, I've got this. And we're all like, oh, man, 30 days. And that's something that comics do great that no other medium can. They have that cliffhanger. I think the closest I've ever seen is the first third season Star Trek, part one, Best of Both Worlds, when they're getting ready to decide whether or not to take out Locutus, a.k.a. Picard, and they just go right to Riker, and he just fire. And then that was a long 3 months till we found out. But they just, you know, cliffhangers just don't do it that well on TV. If comics just do it almost perfectly. And that's what keeps me coming back. When I get a comic like that that wants me, I can't wait for 30 days to get by because I got to get the next issue.
There was, the comic I'm geeking on, I read Avenging Spider-Man number 4, which is Spider-Man and Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I read comics for. You had some nice action, it tied in with other stuff, and it was a character study of Hawkeye and how Hawkeye feels, because he doesn't have any superpowers. And everybody else on the Avengers does, and it gets into him, how he feels, how he deals with that. And it was just a really, really, really good character piece.
And you notice
it's a done at one.
They did change the costume.
Yes.
To match what the movie's going to be, which I have no problem with, because, I mean, I think everybody knows who Hawkeye is by now. So for him to wear a mask is actually kind of dumb.
And his old costume, I'm sorry. It was pretty goofy with the fabric that just kind of hangs down between his legs all the way to the ground. Even as a kid, it's like, why would anybody wear something like that? Good thing about Avenging Spider-Man, it's a done-in-one. Just go to the shop, buy that one.
And I did do something I haven't done yet. I always was complaining about it before. But I actually got the comic before the expiration date on the digital download. And I actually downloaded a digital copy of it. And it was really cool. The one thing that was different, first of all, I got to sign up for Marvel.com, which is no big deal. It's free. But I thought they were going to download it like into my computer. It's in my, quote, digital library on Marvel.com.
Yes.
So I can access it now anytime I want. You know, and, you know, judging I'm going to be, you know, away from my normal comic cons for 3 months, I'm not going to be picking up the next three issues. I have yet to go and find out how much an issue is outside if I just buy it on my own. I do see on Facebook every so often, and they do say, okay, today's free digital lunch, you know, and they'll post like the first alcoholic Tony Stark or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So you can go look at that, which I think is a great way to get interest in your back library. And also, if this is a prevalent point into an upcoming book or maybe movie, you know, it's a way to get it out there. Free is good.
Yeah. The other thing I want to point out, you've talked in the past about how Marvel doesn't give you a lot of time. To redeem your code for your free digital copy, the offer expires on 2/16/2013.
Oh, so I'm reading the
paper. So you've got a year.
Oh, okay. The one thing I did notice, which will drive people nuts who are perfectionists with their comics, is once you peel open that code, you can't put it back.
Right.
It does stay off permanently. So, because I know that was always a, you know, back in the, you know, collector days, you know, did you take out the image coupon? No, I didn't. Well, the one with the image coupons worth $16. The one without is worth $4. Now they're all in
but
the quarter box.
But send in everything for the image coupon. It's, yeah, that book is worth $50.
Cents.
So, well, now, back then. So now you have to do the math.
Oh, that's another giveaway. I'm gonna have to find that. I'm gonna have to find that now. I must have one because I've been collecting all the Savage Dragon stuff, and I'm pretty sure there's something in there. Maybe.
Now, Image United. Joe, when was that for? Like Image's 15th anniversary.
I don't remember. I think you still have my copy of Savage Dragon number 2?
I don't know. I'll have to look.
Because I know we were out somewhere and I didn't have the money and you bought it. And because I just want the Savage Dragon cover. And because you were like, what?
Yeah, and I forgot it in my bag.
Yeah, and it's like, whatever, you know. Give it to me when the rest come out.
So you never want it?
Well, eventually I do. I mean, it's Eric Larson art.
Because it was the, I still remember Images that when they solicited the 10th anniversary hardcover, and it came out 5 years late.
Yeah.
And now Image is doing their, it's Image's 20th anniversary, and part of it is that they're doing a big Image convention. And somebody online on Twitter said, well, the news from the Image convention is going to be late because it's here on the West Coast and blah, 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 blah. And I said, huh, news from something that has to do with Image late. That never happened.
Never.
Freaking. What am I freaking about? Pretty much looks like this is the last season for Fringe. Fringe is, the people at Fox have said that Fringe is losing money. So the people who work on the show Fringe, which is one of the shows I like, from the same people who did Lost and the Star Trek movie and blah, 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 have said, well, if we don't get renewed, we have a plan to end things so that we're not leaving a bunch of cliffhangers, which is good. And that's really, I'm not freaking about a lot. There was one piece of news that I don't know if I'm geeking or freaking about, and we can discuss that before we get into Tales from the Shop, because I know you haven't heard the news yet. It has leaked what Brian Michael Bendis will be working on after he leaves the Avengers.
Wait, let me guess. He's going to relaunch the Starline.
No.
Epic?
No.
Death Move.
He's going to puke! He's going to puke!
Oh, man.
Tell me when you're ready.
X-Men? I don't know.
X-Men!
Oh, I might have to read it again.
Bleeding Cool has, we know that Avengers vs. X-Men is meant to have some major changes for the Marvel Universe. Honest this time. Well, it looks like this is the first of them. After Avengers vs. X-Men, Bendis is bringing to a close his writing and showrunning of the Avengers comics. What's next? Number of industry sources say one thing only. He's taking over the X-Men books. Marvel are expected to perform some form of Marvel relaunch, possibly as a wave rather than a DC all-in-one. And one could also argue Marvel's been doing that for the past couple of years anyway. I completely agree with that. But Bendis will be the writer of the X-Men titles in the same way he writes the Avengers titles.
That may take me back on X-Men, because right now the only X-Men I read is X-Factor. And that's just because Peter David's writing it, and I love Peter David's writing. But, I mean...
Now if Bendis is going to do the X-Men, does that mean that Luke Cage is going to be the leader of the X-Men?
Sweet mother, he's actually a mutant.
Sweet Christmas!
Stranger things have happened. I mean, they swallowed up Namor pretty fast. The first mutant! He's all ours!
I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach because I'm one of the people, I still like Bendis's writing. I still like Bendis's stuff on the Avengers. Everybody forgets just how unbelievably shitty the Avengers titles were before he took over. I mean, Geoff Johns couldn't even write a good Avengers story back before he took over. Ooh. And he's been on the Avengers books, what, 10 years? I think they said 10 years he's been running the Avengers. And for most of that time, the Avengers outsold the X-Men, who was Marvel's number one franchise, which it hasn't been since the early 70s. So Bendis doing X-Men, I'm interested in. I'm not going to say I'm excited about, but I am interested in.
Well, who's
but
taking over
you go
Avengers?
To the Bleeding Cool message board.
Mm-hmm.
There are 120, as of our recording Friday night, there are 122 comments. I would say none of them are positive. For a guy who's one of the best-selling authors at Marvel, everybody online seems to hate him now.
So who's taking over Avengers?
They haven't announced it yet. Of course, they haven't announced that Bendis is going over to the X-Men either. This is a rumor site, so it's just a rumor.
Which works out fine for us, because we all know Deathmate 2 is coming up.
He's going to puke.
I caught it in my hand. Yeah. I got to wash my hands. Well, you know what I'm freaking about?
I'm going to get the Deadly Mutaba virus.
No. I'm missing the Comic-Con.
Even you just saying that, and now I've got the hand sanitizer, and I'm, like, rubbing my hands.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even got a hold of Nick to let him know. But needless to say, my girls are real not too happy about that because, you know, they like to hang at the booth. You know, they like to sell.
They can still do that.
And they also, you know, Dana, I was trying to get Dana into the, you know, doing the photography because I do a lot of that. But she's kind of like, oh, I don't want to do that. I get a headache. Blah, blah, blah. And I said, whatever. So there may not be many pictures from this con coming around that are shared.
Well, you never know.
That are shared. But, you know, so it'll be, you know, it's one of the things I like to do at the cons is I like to try to pick up, you know, a piece of original Supergirl art, the 70s version that I love so well. Because, I was trying to think, okay, I could talk to these guys. But it doesn't matter now because it's over, man. Game over.
Well, maybe there'll be another convention. Maybe in the fall.
I heard there's one in San Diego, but not that it's not that big a deal.
I never hear much about it.
Oh. if it didn't sell out like 2 years before the actual event.
Well, let's get into Tales from the Shop. And Tales from the Shop has a sponsor.
Neat.
That's Chris B. at BroomhildaMusic.com. Don't have much to say about Chris B. other than you should probably buy her CD because it's really, really good. She just moved out to, she moved out west, I think, to Oregon. So she hasn't been online much. She's moving. But if you live out on the West Coast, that means she'll be performing out there more often. And you should sign up for her email list, which is right there on the website at BroomhildaMusic.com. And you'll get an email when she has a gig. She does have a lot of family back here in Minnesota, so I'm sure she'll be back here from time to time. But she did our theme for Tales from the Shop, which is right here. And one of the things I want to talk about when we talk about Tales from the Shop is there's a new show that's on after Walking Dead.
Talking Dead.
It's pretty cool.
I like it.
That's on after the rerun of Walking Dead. Oh. I'm talking the show that's on right after Walking Dead. Called Comic Book Men.
Ah, yes. Men of comics.
And it's set in Kevin Smith's comic shop. They basically took the people who do the, oh, I forget the name of it. I think it's Tell 'em Steve Dave podcast. And they have them, it's supposed to be a reality show about what goes on in a comic shop. But like most reality shows, a lot of it seems to be staged to me because every episode they get four or five people who come in to bring, special items. And oh, it's just a normal day. Here's a guy who brings in a lightsaber that just happens to be from Return of the Jedi. And here's a guy who happens to bring in a comic from 1945. Here's a guy who happens to bring in this old thing.
Yeah.
And here's a guy who happens to bring in a complete set of Crisis on Infinite Earth, so they could talk about that. And I'm going to talk about my experience a little bit. When I was at Schindler's, people who would bring in interesting stuff was few and far between. Most of the stuff people brought in was, well, these are the comics I've bought over the last 2 years, and I want to sell them back. And you'd look at them, and it was basically the same cheese that's sitting in your quarter bin. Every once in a while, you'd get something cool. Someone would bring in a Silver Age book.
Mm-hmm.
Someone would bring in a bunch of Warren magazines. But for the most part, people would bring in stuff that refills your quarter bins. Joe, in your experience, how often was it that people brought in something interesting and cool?
Oh, few and far between. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, whatever.
thinking off the top of your hands.
Yeah, well, I got to.
Well, I guess I know what you're doing after the podcast.
Yeah, well, no, your legs aren't that tired. And yes, you can breathe. Anyways, I plan to. Never mind. The two things that come to mind is,
we're going to get that explicit tag one of these days on iTunes.
Oh, okay. Hang on a second. I got to cleanse the palate. Death mate.
And from now on, maybe I should just introduce you as puke. I'm sure Vince McMahon has lost the copyright to that as somebody's name by now.
Since, you know, the actors who did that, one of them passed away. All right, we digress quite a bit. No, the two things I'm thinking of that came in, generally I'd get guys that would bring in long boxes of books. And I would tell them, you know, depending on what is in it, like if somebody brought in a bunch of 80s stuff, but they happened to be a run of Sandman. Well, at the time, Sandman, like 1 through 20, were running for serious cash. So I would figure, okay, I'll pay you this amount because this is what's going to sell out of your box. The rest of it, you know, I may close the store years from now, and I did, and I may still have it, and I did. But generally, it averaged like $10 a long box. The two things that came in, I think once one of the owners of the other Hots, Dan, he brought in his John Byrne X-Men run at the zenith of its hotness. And I think it was $500 for the whole run, and we probably doubled, if not tripled, the price on it. Another run came in of the Justice League. A lady had like maybe 4 through 100 in one long box. And I looked at it, and I mean, I made her an offer, but I told her, you know, you should really go to the Comic Zone, which, and you can tell me if it's true or not, rumor has it they are leaving their current location to go internet only. But
oh, that I don't know.
I left, and I hadn't been able to find that out or not. But this was a store owned on the uptown area of Minneapolis, been there for years, next to the Comic College of Knowledge. And he dealt with just old stock. I mean, basically an old-time guy, nothing new. And I told her, you should really go talk to this guy because he deals exclusively in this stuff, and he might be a better fit. Fast forward to the next Comic-Con, and Chris Budell, I think the owner, called me over, and he said, did you send over a lady with a Justice League run? And I said, yeah. I didn't think I could sell it. I know you do that. And he goes, well, thank you. He gave me $50 credit to pick out what I wanted. And what I picked out was, do you remember the Deadpool comic book where they superimposed, I think it was a John Romita Jr. art, and then they put Deadpool in it?
Yes, and I do. I love that book.
He'd be looking
so
at
much.
Harry Osborn and Norm Osborn, and he'd be thinking, God, look at that hair. I can't believe it. I can't not look away. I picked up the original Spider-Man comic that had that art. And since Deadpool was just coming out with that issue, and I think it was number 12, I said, anybody who buys Deadpool number 12 gets put in the special drawing for this particular issue.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
We had some fun with it, so. But, you know, generally, I think we probably had more toys come in that were really cool. And I remember having a vintage set of original Hot Wheels come in. And I ended up buying it from the guy because I told the guy, I said, okay, these cars are generic, these cars are okay. This one car is really cool. I mean, seriously, I'm going to probably sell that for like $200-$300. And he sold it to me because it was a fair deal. And I was the only one he knew that car was worth money. But he also, you know, everybody else would be like, well, you know, they're not worth much. I'll give you this. You know, and he knew dang well that one car was probably worth more than what he'd get offered on the other ones. So I made a pretty good deal with that. I do recall at the same time buying a run of Vampirilla from 1 to the original stop, not the one that came out 10 years earlier. Was it 102 or something?
I think so.
And then like 103 came out 10 years later.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is going to sell fantastic. And I dropped a lot of money on both these collections. And Pat come in. Now, if you're my good buddy Pat, he is not a toy guy. He did not understand toys, and he basically looked at me and he said, oh, you spend $300 on Hot Wheels. What a dumb thing. I mean, you know, oh, you spend $400 on this set of Vampirilla. That good. I didn't sell a single Vampirilla out of that set. I may have sold issue one to somebody. I sold all the Hot Wheels. You know, and as when Pat and I decided that we were going to close the shop, or we wanted out. It was a couple years in and we wanted out. And we went to a couple guys and we got lowball offers, and we had had a deal in place where if we wanted out, one wanted to buy the other out, we'd arrange to do it in payments, because we knew there was no way we would have, you know, whatever the cash amount was, 20 grand, 30 grand that we each sunk into the shop. And, you know, if Pat wanted out, you know, he'd get his original investment plus whatever. And we said, there's no way we're going to have that money sitting around. So we had in our partnership agreement before we opened the shop, this is how we can disengage. You know, at first we tried, we just outright sell it. Nobody would give us what we wanted. So we did that. We arranged, okay, over 5 years, this is what I'd pay him every single month. And then I would give him a certain amount of credit. And then he would get a certain percentage overall of his investment back. So if he gave me, I think it ended up being maybe 8% back, not counting whatever he got in merchandise. And there were a few months where, you know, times were tough and I couldn't pay him. And he said, okay, that's fine, because he would just let the payment go forward one. And he looked at it like, well, I get an extra free month of comics. So it worked out well. But as before we got to that point, we were talking. And we had a few arguments where, you know, one of the arguments was, you know, I'm spending money on toys. I don't know what I'm doing. And I said, and that's where I think I went crayon. I said, you're full of blankety blank, because I dropped, you know, money on the Hot Wheels. They're all gone. We made our money back. I dropped money on the Vanderbilts. We haven't sold one of them. I believe I either sold them to or traded them to Joel, who at the time was partner with Chris at Comic Zone. Again, they deal with this old stuff, and they ended up selling it. It was a beautiful run of Vampirellas. I mean, but it just wasn't what we were. Eventually, the store, I evolved into a new comics, new toys store. That's where I got 60% of my profits from. And the rest were, like we've talked about before, you know, shot glasses, lighters, not lighter fluid, because you have to be licensed for that. Glasses, pogs for the time, magic when it was hot, Pokemon was hot, t-shirts, posters, all sorts of fun knickknacks, you know, like we were talking about, you'd see a Dreamhaven, you know. I mean, I wanted my store like that. You walk in and you go, oh my God, I didn't know that was there. And, you know, I think I succeeded.
Now, this was... Also, we're going to kind of do a double shot, because one of the local stores is moving.
Dun, dun, dun.
And you probably know a lot more about it than I do, Joe. The Source is moving from the location they've been at since, God, probably. Well, you know the history of the Source better. I know that there was a version of the Source when I moved here in 87.
Yep, the original Source was located... When I first found it, it was located on Snelling, about where Cheapo Records is. Snelling, I think you're heading south.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I remember
and
that now.
They were kind of a quirky store. They had a lot of new comics, but they had a weird, really weird pricing system for back issues. I mean, you'd walk in and here, this comic is $1.53. This comic is $4.92. This comic is, you know, they had a set percentage they wanted off back issues. They rarely change their prices. I mean, you could run in there and find awesome deals on stuff. I mean, it was fun. Bob, the current owner, co-owner, I should say, of the Source, he had a game store on Lexington Avenue in Roseville. I remember this because at college age, I always tell Bob this, is that we walked in, the big thing college age, my buddies Rick and Dave, we'd always pick a game of the month to play. And we ran into some really cool games. We'd be like Games by James, and there would be a local guy with his game that he was selling. We'd talk with him, and eventually we'd buy it. And we'd say, no, you got to autograph this game for us, you know. So we'd have a lot of fun doing things like that. We walked into Bob's store, and we asked him the same question. He said, oh, try this game called Talisman. People really enjoy it. And we got it, and we went bug nuts with it. I mean, we dropped – literally about $300 in the next 2 months buying all the add-ons to go with this. I mean, I bought lead figures from him based on the characters. I mean, we spent a lot of money. I told Bob it was just because you were so pleasant, so nice. And what had happened was the source made an expansion. They actually talked to Brian about this because they wanted to buy Hot Comics. And at the time, I think this might have been the ball that got Pat and me seriously thinking about buying Hot Comics, because, you know, Brian was expressing interest in selling it because he wanted to go across town, open up another one. And Brian was asking me about that. And he said, well, what do you think if I sell it? And I said, dude, I'd never talk to you again. Because I like Hot Comics the way it was. But they did buy, they bought Mortal Portal, which I believe was down in Egan, I think. They bought Bob's store, closed it, moved it to Rice Street. They had the original store, and they had another fourth store. For the life of me, I can't remember where it was. Eventually, about, was it December or January, after we bought the store. Now, remember, we started the store November 2002, the week Superman died. The source, these four stores, closed down in December because all of a sudden we had people coming in, and we ran over to the source and we were looking, and they had signs on the door that said, you know, closed for the moment, be open soon, blah, blah, blah. They never did reopen. And eventually the stores just emptied out. I don't know how what happened, but I think they went bankrupt because I believe Bob and his investors bought what was left of the source and opened up the current one that's on Larpinder and Lexington. No, Larpinder and Snelling in Roseville or Falcon Heights, somewhere near the fairgrounds there. The reason why I remember the source, the original source closing, is because one of the guys that came to our store said, we should go do guerrilla marketing. He said, what do you mean? He goes, stand in front of the source, either put a sign up saying, hey, we're open, Hot Comics new, come over, visit us, or just stand there and hand out flyers. And unfortunately, I was too chicken shit to do that. Because in my mind, they were going to reopen. And, you know, the one thing that was different about my generation of comic stores versus the older school was that we actually got along with our competition. We would refer them to each other, and we spoke well of them. And the generation before us didn't do that. There were people who would literally come to the comic shows, and they would brag. You know, I didn't see one of my customers show up here. And I was like, what a bass-ackwards way of doing business. I was like, I want to see all my guys here because, first of all, there's no way in hell I'm going to have everything that these guys want. As much as I, you know, give them previews and I take their orders and I get back issues, and I'm not going to get everything. Even if you give me a want list of every single book you want, I probably didn't have the time to find it. You know, I would look for stuff when I visited the other three Hot Comics or the other stores. But to me, it was just a no-brainer. It was just a way to, you know, get business going, get your name out there. I'd bring my stuff and blow my stuff out. You know, and that was back, too. I mean, you had the MCBA Fall Con and Microcon, and then I think Greenberg was doing mini cons, and there were a couple other guys doing cons. It was almost like every month there was a comic show, and I could almost guarantee $400. And then when the MCBA's con came, those were serious moneymakers. I could make my rent times two or three, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, the source, like I said, Bob owns it. I believe Nick bought into it. And they have a few other investors that I'm aware of. And they just, they don't have enough room to put out comics the way they want to. I think they want to do it the way I did, you know, where you can leave comics more than a month on the rack. They don't have room for the graphic novels they want. They don't have room for the games they want. They want to keep a gaming area going. They're moving, I believe, is it 4,000 or more square feet? And they're at 3,300 square feet already. And where they're moving to is they're moving north about maybe a half a mile to a mile. next to a building. There's, when you're on driving on Snelling Avenue, Harmar Shopping Mall is on one side. Across the street, there's a whole row of fast food places. The beginning of that, there's a place called the Guitar Center. Was a Guitar Center. Right now, Eric the Bike Shop is the only place there. They're taking over that space right there. And the last I heard, they were moving maybe the 1st of March, although that may be on hold because of whatever contract reason they have. All I know is Bob's got all the carpet in his warehouse, and he's ready to lay it down because he wants to get the thing moving. So I fully expect by the time I get home that they'll be set up.
Now, speaking of moving, that's why this is a tale from the shop, although we got a pretty good tale from the shop there. When you and Pat split up after the divorce.
Yes. He got
happy. It was a couple, and you know, in my mind, it was
about,
like within a year.
You know what we fought about?
Me.
No.
It was all me.
I'm not saying it. I don't think I have the stuff in my stomach to puke again. But literally,
I think everybody's sick enough.
Deal breaker.
They all have the deadly Mutaba virus.
Like, Pat, you're taking half of this, and I'm taking the other half. He's like, no.
I remember asking, why are Joe and Pat getting a divorce? Mike said, it's probably something you did.
Yeah, it's something you did.
In my mind, it was within a year you moved. You had the small store, and you moved to the big store. And you probably remember it better as to the timeline.
Let's see. When did I sold the store? 2001. I was 3 years into my 5-year contract for the big shop. And I went from 1,000. Well, originally it was 800 square feet. And it had a really weird bump at the back of the store, which you can see in some of the pictures that I've posted on Facebook. Eventually, when it was a video store that went out of business next door, that was their office. So I made a deal with the landlord to just cut the property in half, because it was basically a big store that was divided in half. And a hobby store moved in next door. We cut down the back wall, put up a new one, and the hobby guy did it on his side. So then we had an actual square, 1,000 square feet. Now, I did the math, I did the business plan, and I was looking at, I had a real elaborate plan to fill up a 3,000 square foot store. Now, all the hot comics at the time were only 1,000 square feet. And I made the first move to a 3,000 square foot store. And I had plans because I figured I'd put an arcade in the back. I would have installs going in and out, you know. We'd set up maybe a small candy, pop, soda, anything you didn't have to prepare, because that would be a different set of licensing rules. There was a shop up in White Bear, Forest Lake. I don't know if you ever went with me, Corey. It was
no.
Half bookstore, half comic.
Oh, yes. Half, yes, that's where you got your bookcases.
Yeah, and I actually, that was kind of my premise. I mean, I didn't think I could do the coffee shop thing, although at the time I had a friend who was vaguely interested in coffee shop deal, but he didn't have the money. I was like, I'm willing to, but you got to, you know, invest this amount of money to do it. And, you know, that's a big thing. Everybody's got the will. Everybody wants to be self-employed. Not everybody, but most people. But
I do not want to be self-employed. I like a paycheck.
You got the drive, and the money is the big thing. And it is a drive. Like you said, not everybody wants to be self-employed. It's a drive. It's just something you got to do. But that, anyways, he backed out. And so I just figured I could expand the comic rack. I could leave new comics up more than I do, have a storage area in the back, which ended up just being a junk room. And the other side of the store could all be toys. And then down the middle, I would have a huge table of back issues. Eventually, like you said, they were from a Barnes & Noble. What had happened is Barnes & Noble went out of business. And this guy who owned the shop up in Forest Lake got the old displays that were wood. That's when they replaced some of the metal ones that they used to have. And if you've ever been in Barnes & Noble lately, they've actually shrunk them down. Because it used to be, when you'd walk through, it'd be walking through a canyon. And if you lost your pal in Barnes & Noble, you'd never find him again. Because these things were at least, you know, 8 feet high, loaded with books. Well, now everything's maybe 5 feet high, and that's loaded, you know. So.
Well, you know what I used to do? And I do this still when I go with someone and we go to a store where, you know, it's easy to get lost. Marco! And eventually they will yell polo and find each other.
The Comic-Con. Hi, Rob. Hi, Rob. Well, anyways, to finish that story, he got these books from Barnes & Noble when he closed his coffee shop bookstore because he was in the construction business. And he decided, for all the headaches he had for the bookstore, he'd rather just go back in construction and make money. So he closed his store. I got a bunch of stuff from him. And that became our back wall, which we loaded with graphic novels. And this was about the time I think graphic novels were starting to explode. And we were in on that wave. And graphic novels became a significant part of the mix. I would sell graphic novels sometimes so fast, I couldn't keep them in stock. You know, there was always a core list every week. Sandman, Preacher, Star Wars, which was resurging at the time, Cerebus. Tried to keep those in constantly. And then I would just go A to Z. There were certain other ones, you know, Watchmen, Dark Knight, Bone. You know, these were just popping off the shelf like crazy. This was before manga even took off because I sold the shop before the manga thing went nuts. Eventually, we had all the EC reprints. Eventually, we slowly, once a month, I would order one Masterworks, one DC archives. And eventually, we had an entire run of these things. And people would come in and you could see somebody come in by All-Star 1. And maybe 2-3 weeks later, All-Star 2. And eventually, I found the person doing that. He said, yeah, you have them all the time. I want to buy them when I have the money. He comes here to make sure you have them. Well, that was a lot of money to sink into those books because they're $50 a piece. But, damn, they look good on the shelf and we had them all.
And I bought them as they came out.
Yeah.
And
we had a lot of people bought them.
It's the original Justice Society stories. And compared to a lot of Golden Age stuff, they're a lot of fun because it was, okay, the beginning of the story is the Justice Society gets together and they talk about their recent cases. And then, you know, they show each case. So it was almost like a sampler. Oh, here's a Johnny Thunder story. Here's an Atom story. Here's a Wildcat story. Here's a Green Lantern story. Here's a Flash story. And later in the run, the crimes would all be interconnected. But I remember one of the reasons you jumped into graphic novels so hard was because I was shifting. I was dropping Marvel right and left because at that point Marvel had very few books worth reading. And I'd already broken I've been collecting this since I was 12. Mm. And once you break that, it's easy to drop books.
Oh, yeah.
And I was going full bore onto graphic novels. And your graphic novel sales started going up. And you asked me, well, do you think, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we were both reading Comic Retailer. And I was the one reading all the online stuff. And I said, this is where the money is. Marvel outsells DC on monthlies. DC outsells Marvel on inventory. That's why the past, like, 3-4 years, the end of the year, DC has made more money than Marvel, even though Marvel's at the top of the charts. And that's when you decided, yep, I'm going to dive in.
And that was a part of the business plan. You know, if I'm going to jump into a 3,000-square-foot store, now, I mean, literally, the one side of the store was, what, about 800 feet?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just an entire wall of comics. It went from floor to ceiling. I had it A to Z with families put together. I had room up top for three rows of Snap Happies and back issues. And then I would make rotating displays. I mean, we had, of course, the obligatory Hot Picks, which I let everybody do if they wanted to. I had the Fonzie pick, which was usually some hot babe. Brian Boland was doing a lot of big covers back then. And I even remember I would maybe, like, if Hellboy came out, I'd say, here's a Hellboy thing. I'd put the Hellboy toy with Hellboy and whatever issues I had. You know, just kind of have fun, be creative with it. And I wish I had more pictures of that.
Now, how long did you plan the move? Because there had to be a time when store A was closed and store B wasn't open yet.
I think it was about 6 months, because I talked to the landlord. I made a deal on the rent where I got it really cheap, and I told him what I would do is we figured out how much it would be by the end of the rent for a store that size, and we cut it down so I'd be paying more of a percentage as the 5 years went on until I finally got to where he wanted the rent to be. And I said, well, that will work out fine, because that gives me time to grow different things. And, you know, we talked about graphic novels grew. We had flash in the pans, like Pog, Magic, but I was able to set up games, lots of toys, T-shirts. You know, we had a ton of candy. We've talked about the weird pops we sold. I was able to get a couple display cases from the old shops that survived moving over. It was a pet store that had moved out. It was a pet store that actually had live pets. So once they got out, one of our subscribers was a carpet cleaner. So he went in and did cleaned the carpet to an inch of its life. We went in, we checked out some of the walls, and wherever you have pet stores and restaurants, you got mice. So what we had to do is we finally find where the mice were. We cut the wall away, dug out the nests. Eventually, we had it so the only mice activity in the store was near the back door, which was where the garbage from the Chinese restaurant was. So you know, as long as they stayed in the back, I didn't mind. They weren't coming up front chewing on stuff like they were when we first moved in. But eventually, like I said, we got them down. Then I started buying the rack. That's where I think I was the first guy in town to have the wire rack, which I think we got from Specialty Stores, which I think is the name of the catalog. And they would sit at 45-degree angle, and they'd have probably a lip of about 2 to 3 inches. And then I had ones that would sit at a sharper angle, almost against the wall at 90 degrees. So they were probably closer to like 80, maybe 75. What it would do is it allow you to lay the comic down and you could see the entire cover. Because a lot of times the best thing that would sell in the comic would be the cover. And no matter where they moved the logo to, you could find it. With the 3-inch lip, I could leave back issues and just let them pile. And the only time they went off the new comic rack would be when they spilled over that lip. And that would allow me to do things like when there was a crossover, like I think it was Amazing Spider-Man just crossed over into Daredevil. With something like that, I could take Amazing Spider-Man new, put Daredevil 8 right next to it and say, hey guys, look, crossover. What I usually did for subscription services, I would look ahead and see, make sure whoever ordered Daredevil got Amazing Spider-Man, whoever Amazing Spider-Man got Daredevil. And if they wanted to, they could put them back. So, you know, you plan things like that. You put Spider-Man together, you put Superman together. When you put things back in stock, you were able to use a definitive back in stock sign. And I think the signs were designed by Brian Wilson, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
The old Beach Boy. But he went to town. And he made a bunch of different ones. Back in stock, new this week. Crossover, special event, you know, whatever I could think of, you know. So we had a lot of fun getting that going. But then, you know, it made the entire wall amazing. And then with the ones I said that were 80%, I could put books, I could put variant covers, I could put vertigos and leave them up higher so kids couldn't come in and accidentally grab them.
Does your comic has boobies in it?
Yes. Yes, it does. And it's even embossed.
Now, you planned it for this long, but the actual move?
It was done in a weekend.
Okay.
Because what happened was, is I put the word out, and I think I've got pictures online. If I don't, I'll post them when I get home. I mean, I had some of the best customers. They all came in. Well, what had happened is I got all the particle board. First of all, I got the racks delivered. Then I got a bunch of slat wall delivered. And then we had to figure out how to post it up. And this is where I think Scott Gallatin came in and helped us out. Because what we found out was the floor of the building. Now, this is a building, I believe, built in the 60s. Floor of the building kind of wasn't flat. Because as we were laying the boards down, figuring, okay, we're going to go all the way to the floor to ceiling with these. And we got to the point where it was like, you know what? They're not lining up perfectly. And then Scott went through and he measured, you know, with a level. And he figured, okay, here's, at this part of the store, they're an inch off the ground. As they get in the middle, it'll be a half inch off the ground. As you get to the back, it's going to be 3 inches off the ground. And we leveled it out.
The store was drunk.
We figured where all the studs were in the wall. It was a lot easier when Corey wasn't in the store.
Ba-dum-bum.
Marked them. We'd hoist it, drill into the studs, hang that board. The next piece could sit on top of it. I think we went too high because these things stood, was it 5 feet high? And then it still left. So we had 10 feet high walls, slat wall. The other side was a little more difficult because we had particle beams. But Scott came in and he cut them up and he worked them perfect. And I think we did that in a weekend. We painted it. The actual move.
Except we didn't paint over the animals at the top of the walls.
I never did.
Which is good.
People remember that. I was the one who had to start with the animals on the top. We put posters over them and toys and other knickknacks. The actual move, and this is something that astounds me to this day. Okay, we had everything in a 1,000-foot square store. And it was a weekend deal. We would close on Friday, move Saturday, set up Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, be ready by Wednesday. And I mean, the guys just came and they helped. It was fantastic. We did a great move. I think we all ran down to Angelo's afterwards, the local pizza joint. Somehow, by the time we moved all the stuff from the 1,000-square-foot store, it was planned, you know, box up the statues. Okay, in this particular one, this has all the cards. Put them all in a box. Comics were easy to move. We just went and we bought tables from Sam's Club, and that was, you know, the old particle board folding tables. I had bought in various displays. We're going to put expensive toys in here and little things here, and blah, blah, blah. Bought a front counter. I believe I bought a candy cooler, which was a mistake because I wanted a real cooler. And it was weird because it was big and it had shelving and it would turn on. And when I turned it on, it would never cool anything down. And I finally called a guy in to look at it. And he said, you know what you got here? This isn't a regular cooler because I wanted it to cool pop. So this is a candy cooler. This is for putting candy in, like chocolates, and keeping it cool. And I was like, oh, I spent $400 on this thing. So anyways, that became the entire candy thing, which was cool, because then I could load it up with candy and chocolates. I didn't have to worry about it. And the big thing that made that explode in popularity was, as I figured it out, the gas stations would charge you, okay, this candy bar is $1 plus 7 cents sales tax. I would charge you 93 cents, so it ended up being just $1. All the neighborhood kids figured that out. They'd come over to me and buy it because they knew they didn't have to have a bunch of pennies for sales tax.
Damn Skippy.
Somehow Mike scored a cooler from Coke, No, it was Pepsi, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where I was out running around trying to find a cooler for Pop, and Pepsi came in and Mike said, well, tell you what, we need a cooler for this, and we'll buy it from you. Okay. And we had the old pop machine from Comic Archives, which had closed by that time. And I think I bought a few displays from him as well. So we had the displays in, and then the moving time came, and you know, people could be very careful, put this over here, blah, 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 blah. By the time we moved everything and had everything set, the store was full. The 3,000-square-foot store was full of merchandise. And I was like, the hell just happened here? We had all this merchandise in the 1,000-foot store, and now I'm in the 3,000-square-foot store, and I'm out of room. I mean, what it was is like, okay, we had rows of X-Men toys, but we didn't have them by character. We had them all, here are your X-Men toys, and you'd go in like you buy Hot Wheels at Targets, dig, dig, dig till you find the one you want. With the new store, I was able to put, okay, here's Rogue, here's Strong Guy, here's Cyclops, here's Storm 1, Storm 2. So you come in and you would see entire racks of just that. And when Spawn toys came in, I mean, it was really amazing because, like I talked before, you know, I'd get in 20 cases, 15 pre-sold, the rest would go on the wall. I could put every character on the wall. And it would allow me to also do things which probably drove toy collectors nuts. I would know which toy I needed. I'd run to Toys R Us and buy them if I could find them, or Target, or wherever, you know. And the comics loaded up great. Diamond at the time had a Christmas program where you could order on consignment graphic novels. And at the end of the season, return the ones you didn't sell and, you know, that would be call it even. Well, we did that program. We didn't return any because we kept them in the back of the room. I remember the Diamond rep coming in and said, you didn't really return anything. I said, no, we kept them. Why? What, we're filling up the back. I remember that guy, Tim, he loved me. He'd come in and he'd sit down and I'd be like, Tim, don't even sell me anything. Just give me the list of what you're pushing this month and I'll give you the list of what else I need. Because, you know, Diamond, like everybody, they may have ordered 5,000 copies of Dark Knight hardcover, second print or whatever. So they would come and they'd have a special deal, you know, buy two, get this free. And 90% of the time I would order stuff from him. You know, Nick told me one time, one of the reasons Diamond loved me was because I was big on toys. You know,
yeah.
They'd call me and I'd say, oh yeah, order me toys. I loved it. The first comic store exclusive was Warrior Nun, how do you say it? Arela? And that was one of the first comic store exclusive toys. And I mean, we sold 50, 60 of them, you know. Nowadays, if I had one, I'd be lucky to get 99 cents on eBay. You know, and that was probably almost a golden age of toys because if you were a small comic book company, you could make toys. McFarlane was busting the entire toy industry wide open with his figures, groundbreaking stuff, you know, showing that you could make a $7-$8 toy and somebody's going to come and buy it. And there were, you know, exclusive ones, not the like Diamond Direct nowadays, but, you know, smaller companies. We'd see Dark Horse got into it. And of course, Star Wars toys were flying off the shelf. Hot Comics was always big on Star Wars toys. I mean, when the new toys came, it was geeky day. You know, just could crack them open and see what they got, look at the variants. And, you know, we had walls of Star Wars toys. Take that, Target.
Well, we've wasted 90 minutes.
Cool. And I haven't even opened my Fig Newton bar yet. Chewy cookies.
We were going to talk about the great water gun war, weren't we?
Yes, that happened after the store was built.
Well, I guess that one's going to have to wait, isn't it?
Yeah, and I will talk about it hopefully before I get home.
But we'll do it next week.
After the Comic-Con.
Wait, we're not talking till after the Comic-Con?
I mean, I won't be home till after Comic-Con.
Oh.
But I'm bitter.
I was going to say, it's one thing not to tell me where you are. It's another thing to say, and we're not talking for 3 months.
Well, we could, but I feel we owe it to our podcast listeners.
Well, and if you bail on me, I'm going to have to find somebody else to talk comics with, because doing this overnight, I feel like I don't talk to anybody. I'll have like one coworker, and the rest of the time it's like I come home, I watch a little TV, and then I go to sleep. And I wake up, and I go into work. And I really honestly feel like I'm missing out on the world. Do we have a different president yet?
They're working.
Did I miss the election?
Oh, no. I'll tell you when this tune in. Right now, there's not nothing to tune in for.
Oh, okay. Are we? Did we start any wars?
No, I think they're holding off till after the election.
Oh, okay, good. Is there a new WWE champion yet?
No.
Okay.
And you know, that's the other thing, too. I'm going to miss WrestleMania.
Yeah, same here, but I prefer to get it on DVD anyway, because then you get the... Because if you buy WrestleMania, it's what, $60 now?
Probably.
But if you wait and buy the DVD, you can get that for $25.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes with the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah. I would probably, if I was home, I was planning on ordering it, just because Holly was keeping me up to date as to what was going on.
I'm a month and a half behind. I'm up to the point where Raw has become a really bad horror movie.
Oh, personally. You know what was funny about that? Holly thought it was stupid. She's 12 years old.
I'm watching it going, wait. Well, I'll explain to the listeners. They're doing a story where Kane has returned. And I just watched the one where two of the characters are going to go out on a date. And when they get out to their car, there's a flat tire. And then Kane comes. And at that point, it was, okay, I'm going in the other room and make a sandwich. Because it was, it looked like Friday the 13th, except without any money or acting ability or nudity or blood.
I just have to, you know, the big thing is I just talked to Holly, and it's two questions. First of all, what did CM Punk do, and what else is going on?
There you go.
And really, nothing else was going on.
I will say, if you like wrestling, if you're a wrestling fan, there's a promotion called Ring of Honor. They've got a national TV show. It's an hour long. It's great. You're not going to know the wrestlers for a while. They're, you know, just they're introducing them and everything. But the action is great. It's the Southern athletic style. Jim Cornette's in charge of the booking, so the booking makes sense. They've got a bad guy stable that I really like. And it's good old-fashioned wrestling. And if you don't like wrestling, well, then don't watch any of it. You probably should have quit listening a few minutes ago.
True. There is that.
Oh, one other thing I'm geeking on.
Mm-hmm.
With the digital TV, the local channel here, Channel 5, has like five or six different digital channels. And one of them is MeTV. It's Memorable Entertainment Television. They rerun old TV shows. That's all they do.
Yeah.
I'm hooked on Mission Impossible, Thriller, and Peter Gunn.
Oh, fun.
But they're running old TV shows. They run sitcoms. They run westerns in the afternoon. They run sitcoms in the evening. They run The Untouchables at night. And Saturday nights are sci-fi Saturday nights. They show two episodes of Batman, an episode of Star Trek, an episode of Lost in Space, and an episode of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
So you know who David Morrissey is?
Wasn't he the lead singer of the Smiths?
No. He has
Crickets
just been...
like that.
He has just been cast as the governor for the third season of Walking Dead.
Spoilers!
Nah, it's not a spoiler. It's all over comic resources.
Don't care. It's still a spoiler.
Nope.
One of the director at the group home I work at most of the time, the cottage I work at most of the time, she's a big Walking Dead fan. And we were talking about it, and I said, oh, and by the way, when you start hearing people talk about the governor, be afraid. Be very afraid. You know, we should talk about Walking Dead next time. Because I am just
Maybe.
Loving the show.
Because I'm not
show.
Sure I'll be able to watch the remaining four episodes.
Well, I'll put it this way. If you miss them at 8, they rerun it again at like 10. Mm-hmm. And then they rerun it at 1, and they rerun it at 4
oh, cool.
in the morning.
So I'll have my chance.
They rerun that thing the whole night. Well, you've wasted an hour and a half of your life listening to us blather on about funny books and TV shows and pro wrestling and the deadly Mutaba virus.
Yes.
And we would like to remind you that, as always, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most.